Today in Dearborn, Michigan, the Ford Motor Company is celebrating its first 100 years. The company's early innovations changed the world, and along the way, Ford has produced its share of classics. T-Birds and Mustangs, the Taurus, the Explorer, and the best-selling F-Series pickup trucks. But in the late 1990s, the company founded by Henry Ford stumbled. Its stock price collapsed, and in 2001, it lost more than $5 billion. Now the future of the automaker depends on the leadership of another member of the Ford family. NPR's John Itzde reports.
It's a rainy, dreary day at Mount Vernon, the home of George Washington. But the crowd inside this tent on the mansion's south lawn is buzzing with excitement. These Ford Motor Company employees and dealers are waiting for Bill Ford Jr., the chairman and CEO of the company, and great-grandson of the firm's legendary founder. He's headlining this Ford Centennial event, one of many taking place across the country this month.
So once again, you all join me in giving a big Washington welcome to Bill Ford.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Ford tells his audience that it's a challenging time in the auto industry. With cutthroat competition and a soft economy, seeing the way to the future isn't easy. But he also reminds them of the company's brilliant beginning a century ago with innovations unparalleled in the auto industry, innovations that profoundly affected the world.
The moving assembly line made cars affordable for the average family, and the $5 a day wage created widespread prosperity. And the Model T literally put the world on wheels.
The question for Ford, as it struggles to update its product line and overcome the missteps of the late 1990s, is whether it can recapture that spirit of innovation that led the world into the automotive age 100 years ago. Greenfield Village in Dearborn, Michigan is a recreation of village life in the early 1900s and includes the Henry Ford Museum. It has some rides like this carousel, but the highlight of this theme park is not some terrifying upside-down roller coaster. It's a ride in a Model T Ford, the car that spawned America's car culture.
It drives very smooth. I think Henry Ford produced a fine product here. Now, I just turned the car. What do you think about that turning circle? Pretty nice and tight.
Don Ludwig, a retired school teacher, drives folks around the quaint streets of Greenfield Village. And today, Henry Ford Museum curator Bob Casey is along, pointing out the sights.
We are now in front of Henry Ford's birthplace, which was one of the first buildings he actually renovated and preserved in its original site, but it was one of the last buildings that was actually moved here.
Henry Ford was born and raised on a farm near Dearborn, Michigan, just outside Detroit. His vision of a rugged, affordable car had its origins there.
He was aiming his car really at farmers. Having grown up on a farm, he was fully aware of the isolation of living on a farm, and he believed that farmers wanted the freedom to move around. It needed to be relatively simple, light, so that it could be easy to manufacture and easy to repair. It needed to be rugged because the roads in America at that point were just awful. And if you gave them a machine that they could afford to buy that would do that and do it reliably, that they would buy it.
After two failed companies and more than a dozen car designs, Henry Ford finally came up with an automobile that met those requirements. It was the Model T. Up until then, cars had been the toys of the rich and cost around $3,000, triple the cost of the average house. Ford's Model T initially cost $850. It was a smash hit. By the mid-1920s, half the cars in the world were Model T Fords. From the beginning, Ford couldn't keep up with demand, so he built a new factory near Detroit in Highland Park.
You can make an excellent case that this Highland Park plant was the birthplace of the American consumer society.
Chaba Chetta, the editor-in-chief of Car and Driver magazine, is standing just across the street from the industrial ruin of the Highland Park plant, where the assembly line and mass production were born. And their birth had unintended side effects.
This was the first plant where large quantities of everyday workers could earn an excellent wage without having any special skills, and that allowed them to buy the products that they were actually manufacturing, as well as homes and the other things that make up the American good life.
Henry Ford didn't plan it that way, but it all sprang from his vision of a car for the masses. To make the car affordable, he had to build it efficiently. In his search for efficiency, he and his engineers developed the moving assembly line. It reduced the number of hours required to make a Model T from 700 to 93. But laboring on the assembly line was so physically taxing and mind-numbing that half the workers quit every month. To entice them to stay, Ford stunned the world by announcing he would pay workers $5 a day, double the going wage. Job seekers flocked to Detroit from around the world.
The $5 a day wage sounds wonderful, but there actually were a few strings attached. The way it worked was you still got paid the existing wage of about $2.25 per day, and you got the additional $5 an hour if you were 22 years old or more, if you stayed on the job for 6 months, and if Ford approved of the way you were living, and they actually established a Ford sociological department that would send inspectors out to your home to ensure that you were living a good, honest, thrifty, hardworking life. And then and only then did you get your $5 a day.
But while Ford was the first major manufacturer to pay his workers $5 a day, he was no friend of organized labor.
Henry Ford hated labor unions. He hated, in fact, anybody who was going to try to tell him how to run his business.
Ford Museum curator Bob Casey.
He resisted unionization with every means at his power. He had a spy system throughout the plant. They would physically threaten you. They would beat you up. There's a famous or infamous situation that happened when a group of union organizers handing out literature on Ford property were physically attacked. They were on an overpass, a pedestrian overpass, at the entrance to the Great Rouge plant. It became known in the labor movement as the Battle of the Overpass.
Henry Ford was also a very stubborn man who was unwilling to adapt his early vision to changing times. For nearly two decades, the Model T was the only car the company made. Casey says Ford had an almost Calvinistic view that the Model T was the only car a person could ever need or want. And despite changing consumer tastes and plummeting sales in the mid-1920s, Ford vehemently resisted the idea of offering a new model. Again, Bob Casey.
Henry Ford had been out of town on business. Many of his executives knew they needed a new car, and they built a prototype. Henry Ford got back when they didn't quite expect it. He found out about this car and literally began to tear it apart, took hammers to it, ripped doors off, just beat the daylights out of it as if to say, don't ever do this again. I'm not interested in new cars.
Henry Ford's stubbornness and inability to change nearly drove his company to bankruptcy. He finally shut down his manufacturing operation for 7 months, a horrible business decision, while the company designed a new car. It was a fine car, the Model A. But from then on, the Ford Motor Company became a lot like the other big car makers, with ups and downs based on the economy and cycles of innovation and stagnation. Workers on this assembly line in Ford's huge River Rouge complex are making the 2003 Mustang. Ford's assembly lines are no longer state-of-the-art. And if the company has any hope of making it another 100 years, it will need plants that adapt more quickly as consumer tastes change. But Ford's current problems go beyond its inefficient manufacturing, says Car and Driver's Chabachetta.
Ford was on an acquisition binge in the 90s. They bought Jaguar, Range Rover, they bought Volvo. If you totally integrate these companies and a Jaguar just becomes a Ford with the Jaguar badge on it and a price tag twice as high, customers see right through that. Figuring out that right blend of integration is tough, and you burn up some money in the process, and Ford doesn't have that money to burn.
Also, says Chetta, Ford is a step behind in the latest product innovation, the car-based SUV. Ford's version won't go on sale until next year. CEO Bill Ford has promised a cascade of 100 new products in the next 5 years, but they'll compete in a market where the worldwide industry can currently produce almost 20 million vehicles more than consumers want. In one corner of the Rouge plant, Ford is making a bet emblematic of its current CEO's real passion and view of the future, and it's green.
On the north end of the property, today we're looking over the new Dearborn truck plant.
That's Ford Vice President Tim O'Brien.
And we're looking at a factory with the world's largest habitat roof on top of it, a 10.5-acre roof of flowering sedum. You see the coloration out there? Sort of a light purple. That's actually flowering right now.
The new truck plant's green sod roof, punctuated with vast glass skylights, is a stark contrast to the rusting, smokestacked factories that dominate the Rouge complex. It's the clearest manifestation of Bill Ford's stated vision of running a profitable car company that's an environmental leader. Tim O'Brien says this building with its sod roof is not just a gimmick.
It does a lot for us financially as a business. It really saves us millions of dollars in regulatory costs related to stormwater control on this site. It saves us tens of thousands of dollars because of its insulating value on electrical costs, heating and cooling costs basically in the building.
Bill Ford also says he wants to be a leader in green vehicles. He believes the company that leads in that category will have a future. But Ciabatetta says it's not at all clear that that's what most consumers want.
In opinion polls, they love the environment, but when it's time to go down and buy a new vehicle, they do pick a Ford Explorer. It's exactly like the average person when you ask them in an opinion poll, do you want to lose weight? Of course I do. Then they go out to eat and order chicken fried steak. When you're in the business of selling products to these customers, you must give them what they want, otherwise you're not going to make a profit. And this is definitely at odds with Bill Ford's environmentalism.
John Galbraith.
Hi, John. How are you?
Very nice to meet you. Thanks so much for coming.
Are you kidding? Thanks for having me. This is great.
It's great to have you in Washington.
You guys are doing a great job. You really are.
Back at the Mount Vernon event, Bill Ford is schmoozing with the dealers, assuring them that Ford does have attractive conventional products in the pipeline that will make a profit in the coming years. But he keeps coming back to green vehicles.
Hybrids are here, and I feel much more confident in the development of the hybrids. Fuel cells, I'm very hopeful, and we're pouring huge amounts of our research budget into them, but I think it's less certain in terms of the timing.
Family leadership at the top of a major company can be tricky. When power is concentrated, it's easy to make big mistakes. Ford's great-grandfather almost killed the company by sticking too long with a Model T. His uncle, Henry Ford II, wounded the company badly when employee Lee Iacocca came to him with the idea for the minivan. Ford said no, and Iacocca took the idea to Chrysler, where it became a huge hit. Bill Ford will have to avoid those kinds of miscalculations if Ford Motor Company is to have a chance at another 100 years. John Idstey, NPR News.